From the Midas of Roseburg studio, KQEN weather, cloudy, 56 this afternoon, rain turning into showers after midnight, and a low of 43 by tonight. Showers likely again tomorrow on 57. More showers, 45 tomorrow night, and currently 53. KQEN News Time, 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon, and thanks for being here as we wrap up another week of programs on Inside Douglas County. And what a week it's been. State Representative Gary Leaf of Roseburg joining in this afternoon. Gary, give us your overall thoughts about some of the things going on right now.
So thanks, Kyle, for asking me to be on the program today. Let me first comment about one of my recent Facebook posts. I wish we still focused on civics and constitutional government in our educational system. Our constitutional structure is working exactly as the founders at both the federal and the state levels intended. I don't think that people realize how much authority and responsibility is given to a governor during times like this emergency. Once this emergency declaration was established, the governor became the primary person in charge of this crisis. The legislature will be called into a session when and if the governor has specific needs or requests, like funding or agency requests. But I want to thank the governor for the ongoing conference calls and for the conversations that I've had with her and the key players in the crisis response. You know, she doesn't have to ask for input at all. She has the authority to do whatever she wants to do. And that's included all of the elected officials, like all the representatives, the senators, the county commissioners. There are significant decisions being made at this time, and there are no easy decisions. So I'm calling on all elected officials to tone down the criticism and support the leaders who are constitutionally mandated to manage a crisis like this. And they are the governor, the county commissioners, and the county public health directors. My role as a representative is to work with the citizens of my district, House District 2, Southern Oregon, provide updates and information to make sure that they're connected to the right agencies. My office is working virtually around the clock on my staff to handle the massive amounts of questions and emails from my constituents. So my key role to the citizens are to communicate, ensure they are connected to the right support services. And finally, I want to say there is no easy fix or simple solutions to this crisis. It's complex, and it's impacting our country in historically unprecedented ways. And lastly, don't jump to conclusions. Our daughter called us up two nights ago and said, "Oh my gosh, I heard I-5 was closed down." You know, and I said, "Oh, I'd probably be the first one to know about that." And it was absolutely false. So make sure you get credible information.
Obviously, during this time, a lot of information gets out there, and you're correct. I've fielded some questions even today from listeners and folks around the Umpqua Valley who had heard rumors about different things. And so far, they are just those. Wanted to ask you about the prospects for a special session next week. Where do we stand there?
So we've been told by the governor to stand by for a special session. We've been in contact with the Speaker of the House, but as of today, we have not been told the purpose or the timing. Remember, Kyle, under our Constitution, each special session must cover a single specific item, and so I would expect a number of these sessions in the coming months. Now, there's a coronavirus committee, and that committee presented us with 47 different topics out of this special committee. And I came back with my leadership role was my top choices were shelter and housing assistance due to the lack of income, food supporting the state's food bank, suspension of the CAT tax, tax, that's that corporate activity tax, until the businesses recover, prohibit commercial and residential foreclosures during the duration of this declaration, and rent relief for small businesses. But I think the crisis has reminded everyone that rural American is so very important to the overall health and well-being of our economy. You simply cannot move everyone into metropolitan areas like Portland. I work with a professor at Umpqua Community College who often reminds me of the famous Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I think far too many years we have focused on a society that fulfills the aspirational or higher order needs, but it's at times like this that we're reminded that food, shelter, and clothing are the most basic needs, and they're important. Many of our most basic needs come from areas like rural America, like where we are in Oregon here. Eggs from farms, milk from cows, toilet paper from trees. God help us if we run out of that. And after this crisis ends, I hope my fellow legislators will recognize the value of rural America and rural Oregon separate from metropolitan areas.
So if a special session is called, what's the turnaround time that they can ask you to be in Salem?
Well, generally, it would be probably a one-day session. They would have our leadership from the caucus agree to whatever, you know, that the topics were. We would come there, and there might be, you know, one or two or three things on the table. We would go through and pass those through then to the Senate, and then the governor would sign. But generally, it's just going to be a day.
And so a day-long session, but would you, for instance, if one is going to be called on Tuesday, would you find out by Sunday, or would it be Monday, or is that kind of up in the air?
Oh, I think they'd probably give us a week's time. You know, when we were talking about it last week, you know, the speaker was indicating something like next Friday. So, you know, I would hope, and I would probably think they would give us at least a week.
So watching this coronavirus situation, this is really unlike anything we've experienced before.
Yeah, there's tremendous amounts of resources coming from federal and state governments. They're flowing in through various agencies and local governments. Again, I don't think people realize how challenging it is to amend various laws and regulations that stand in the way of dealing with a crisis like this. I had a phone conversation with Congressman Walden on Wednesday, along with other elected leaders. And he explained the recent federal stimulus package coming. You know, you've heard it now, $1,200 per person, $500 per child. A family of four should be receiving about $3,400, all great. But for businesses, there's a $350 billion SBA loan coming to small businesses. And the best part of that is that those that have kept their employees or will rehire, they will receive 8 weeks of payroll as a grant. They won't have to pay that back. Then that loan, whatever else dollars they need to keep them solvent, will be paid back in the years 2021 and 2022. I've heard that we could lose as much as 75% of our businesses out there. So it's so vital that we keep them going. Last night, I got a call from one of the local vice presidents of a local bank who warned me that they don't even have the paperwork or know what the plan actually is for SBA. And so he was really concerned. Don't everybody go in there and apply for these things, because they don't have all that right now. But he agreed starting to build a relationship with a bank is very, very important, so that when the paperwork comes, they're ready to go.
One of the big changes, of course, with the situation has been, as you mentioned, the businesses, a number of different kinds of businesses closing, many reducing hours, going to different delivery models, things like that. And then also the aspect of all these events that are currently not happening.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's too bad. Of course, you know, my committees, you know, have been shut down too. Some of the work that we've been doing with some of the agencies have been closed as well. but we are having communications via home, at home on the phone constantly. So, I mean, in the, yesterday morning, I think I was on the phone from 7:30 in the morning till noon, you know, on doing committee work and stuff like that. So we can still do that. But, you know, things like the senior center, you know, those are heartbreaking to see those closed, but it's important that they stay closed. It's just common sense right now. Obviously, the virus transmits within a population. So the more people that you have, the more that virus is going to be transmitted. So avoiding these bigger crowds is simply a matter of reducing, you know, the transmission. I think we're fortunate in rural Oregon because we have a lower population density. We don't have the large mass transits and the urban core density issues. You know, it's not like being in downtown Portland where, you know, there's people everywhere. So it may seem a little bit odd here in rural Oregon, but I think overall it makes sense to reduce the places where people gather. And it also reduces the amount of buildings and events for which we have to clean after a big event and stuff like that. You know, I've been going around. I've been trying to support the local businesses. You know, if you're in business and you actually have to physically touch someone, those have been shut down. But have you been out to Lowe's or Home Depot? I mean, they're busy. There's a lot of people that are using their time off to do their tiny do list or whatever. And I think it's great. I go out there, everybody's doing that 6 feet social distancing. We're all washing our hands and we've got cleaning solvents going on and stuff like that. But I was at Handyman in Apex, you know, and they're still open. So we're still, you know, we're still doing, you know, things, that we normally wouldn't have the time to do. And business are just trying to deal with that right now.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. It's State Representative Gary Leaf with us. We'll be back in 1 minute. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1247 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1 on News Radio 1240 KQEN. On Mondays, Inside Douglas County, we'll talk to Dr. Cora Hart, psychologist and behavioral health program director with South River Community Health Center. We'll talk about the psychological aspects of dealing with the COVID-19, all the shutdowns, all the distancing, all of that with Dr. Cora Hart on Mondays, Inside Douglas County. State Representative Gary Leaf with us, running through on a number of topics. One of the things, of course, the legislature very involved in and a big part of the state budget is education. What are you hearing right now with the school closures and just all the work behind the scenes to figure out how to continue to provide some level of students services during this time when the schools remain closed?
You know, Kyle, some things are just inevitable at a time like this. Yes, closings of schools have placed a burden on everybody, but the schools have to consider the teachers, administration, and the support staff. And perhaps the biggest thing that we need to learn from this is that our educational system relies on people. And I think for too long we've underpaid those teams and not provided them with the proper tools in a modern society. For example, I believe this crisis will show that we need to provide all students with a computer and internet access. I think that's why I'm able to do my job right now, because I have all those tools, you know, available, and I spend a majority of my time using those tools. And for some students, they just don't have those tools and they don't have internet access. And I think for a long time, we've funded the school solely on enrollment reimbursement. And we kind of need to go to a two-tiered funding model, like an enrollment reimbursement, or what they call average daily membership, should fund the academic year operations. But we should actually allocate a separate funding for technology, infrastructure, and student support. I don't know if you've seen just recently, I mean, they're giving away some of these notebooks to students so that they can get online, so they can do some of their schoolwork. And I think if you look at you know, homeschoolers and stuff, they have those kinds of things. But the people that go to the traditional public schools, they need to have those resources too, and we need to fund those.
Let's go maybe off of the COVID-19 for a bit in the midst of all this, and really right before this was getting to be the issue that it is now. Following the last session, the short session, the governor not happy with the way that ended, and then going out and putting into effect some aspects of the climate change legislation she'd been pushing for. What are your thoughts there?
Well, she did this through executive orders, but I got to tell you, in my opinion, now's not the time to focus on that set of orders. I think as a result of this crisis, we're going to be able to review many of our laws and regulations. Once we get back, you know, in our session, once we restart the economy, once we get people back to work, once we save our businesses, many of our crisis positions will need to be reviewed. But that is a conversation that we need to have in the future. Right now, this is not the time to really throw darts, you know, at something that has nothing to do with the crisis that we're in right now.
And whether it's that topic or whether it is the coronavirus topic, do you feel like that kind of also, again, highlights the rural-urban divide issue we talk about so often in Oregon?
Oh, my gosh. I think this crisis has reminded everyone that rural America is so important to the overall health and well-being of our economy. You cannot simply move everyone to a high-density metropolitan area. You know, I think it's so important that we continue to understand one size does not fit everyone. I mean, what works in a metropolitan Portland might be great, but it may not be the best thing for the urban areas like Southern Oregon or the coast or Eastern Oregon. They're all different. And I think that's what we forget oftentimes is that that they are different. And unfortunately, where the masses have elected our representatives and our senators comes from those metropolitan high-density areas. And they really don't understand what it's like to drive 20 miles to work because they get on a bus or they, you know, take public transportation or they take a train somewhere. And we need to kind of understand that for too many years we've been focused on that higher need of the metro, you know, bring everybody into the big city. And I think that after this crisis is over, we'll have a better understanding of that. And I think, you know, when you look down the road too at our elections, I think that's really why it's so important to have kind of an equal voice from rural to the metropolitan. So we, you know, like they did in 2011, I think, was you had a 30-30 voice between the Democrats and the Republicans. It was a great session where you really had to have structure between both sides to have them understand, whoa, there's a lot of difference between where you're from and where we're from.
And with the urban-rural divide in this coronavirus situation, some people have looked at some of the rules and some of the things that have been put in place, and then looked at other situations as well, and wondered if there aren't times, as is done with the minimum wage law in Oregon, where there needs to be some differentiation between how you apply overall principled rules in, let's say, Eugene to Portland, and how you might apply them in the rest of the state.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, when we started doing the minimum wage increases back, oh my gosh, I don't know, it was 20 some years ago. One of the things that I saw that I thought would really hurt us is you have to pay someone who's first entering into the workforce the same exact pay that somebody's, you know, gone through Umpqua Community College. And I remember when I first started working, I think I made like $1 an hour for sweeping floors back in the early 70s or the late 60s. And I was thrilled to be able to do that. But I worked myself up into that minimum wage kind of thing. You can't do that anymore. And I think that it's really important to really understand that, you know, that there's consequences on all that stuff. Look at a family who has had assistance, you know, food stamps or other assistance, and all of a sudden they get bumped into that minimum wage has gone way up, and all of a sudden they're off of that assistance. That costs them a lot. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, they don't want that minimum wage increase because they just lost so many benefits. We need to have kind of a way that we can kind of wean them off of those things rather than just simply cutting them off.
About 30 seconds left. Final thoughts for us.
So, you know, Kyle, we're going to get through this crisis. There's going to be a tomorrow. It may be a bit different, and I'm sure that some things will change, but I'd like us all to focus on our future and show a bit more patience as all of the government responses come online. Keep informed on the county's website. Follow me on my Facebook changes. And I want to thank everyone out there for listening to me. And Kyle, thank you for having me on the show today.
State Representative Gary Leaf, 1257, inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.